research, I would say, which was done on those celebrities who kind of implant their teeth.
Yeah.
And it really costs a lot, really a lot, in order to implant one teeth. So it's not like they don't have perfect teeth from day one,
right?
But they make it in that manner, so that because they are going to be a public figure, or they are a public figure,
right?
So they want to show it in the best manner. So this teen, unfortunately, he or she looks at that particular celebrity or social influencer, and the person is like, oh my God, I don't have these kind of teeth, I don't have this kind of eye color, I don't have this kind of skin tone, or I don't have these kind of, example, hair color, example, you see?
So it's like when you feel like these are the things, they define you. Mm-hmm. So who has to come and teach them this is not something that defines you?
Exactly. So the solution is basically to get rid of these kind of people, number one. Get a break from
social
media.
Take a break from social media.
And focus on self-acceptance. You know, in the world, there are billions of people whose body image, hair color, whatever, is like other people.
Yeah.
Like, example, my skin color is no more different than any other person.
Right.
Even the person, I didn't go through any kind of surgery. Example, even other people, they didn't go through any kind of surgery in order to get a kind of special hair color or eye color or skin color or whatever color. Yeah. So I'm like, I am me. So accept it. Like, I am me, and I have to focus on accepting myself.
Myself.
Rather than saying, oh, I want to be like him or her. You see, this is the first step. So there are 2 points. Number one is getting
take
rid of
break.
Social media.
Take a break from social media.
Yeah, taking a break from social media. Not following those kind of people.
Stop feeding your soul with that content.
Mm-hmm. Number two is focus on accepting, like on self-acceptance.
Yourself.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. And of course, like surrounding people who accept themselves is very important.
All right. So now you
having friends who have this kind of quality, self-acceptance.
Right. Right. We'll discuss more with you. Mm-hmm. Let's take a short break here, dear listeners. Stay tuned.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise."
Welcome back. This is Islamic Upbringing. Well, we have been talking about dissatisfaction and discontent. That's a lot there in teens, because they constantly keep on comparing themselves with these so-called perfect figures who appear to be so perfect, or so, I would say, artificial to me, and they want to look like them, so they are discontent with the physical appearance they have. So how do these girls or these boys come out of this? Brother Liaquat, you said that one is to get rid of social media for some time, take a break, stop feeding your soul with that content that brings you dissatisfaction. Number two, you said acknowledge yourself. Accept, have this concept of self-acceptance, and acknowledge the way you're made, and say to yourself that this is not what defines me, and there's something beyond this that defines
exactly.
me. So, and you were discussing the third point.
Yeah. So the third point is to surround
yourself
with positive influences and those people who accept themselves. And the fourth point is learning about self-worth beyond appearance. This is very important.
Yeah.
So my appearance is not what defines me.
Yeah.
My worth is not my appearance, unlike other maybe celebrities.
Yeah.
Like, whose worth is in their face. That's it.
Actually,
don't have anything.
You said, like, as per psychology, they are kind of suffering from this.
They have disorders, unfortunately.
Right.
Of course, this is through a research. Okay?
Right.
I'm not targeting a particular celebrity or something.
Right.
But this is there, okay?
Yeah.
Like, because they want themselves to be praised, so they go ahead with making themselves more beautiful.
And there was also this article recently I went through. I was saying that I don't remember the name of celebrities, though. But I was saying, like, for example, this particular lady in Hollywood is considered to be like one of the beautiful women around the world, but she herself is unsatisfied with her particular nose. And there was something else, like, similarly, there's another actor who is known for this particular thing, but he himself is unsatisfied with this particular thing of about him. So yeah, like, sometimes people praise your work, things that you yourself do not acknowledge, but people see that as something good in you. Number one is you yourself acknowledge things.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, also engaging with more friends and, like, kind of not
who support you.
Yeah, exactly. Who are, like, who know who you are and who accept how you are.
All right, it's so not there should be friends who are content, first of all, with themselves, satisfied with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when you surround yourself with them, they're going to give you those positive vibes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, okay, so a particular skin tone, example, if a person is having a particular skin tone, it doesn't make any different with another particular skin tone. Why? Because it's a creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And upon
embrace,
the creation of Allah
embrace
subhanahu
the variety.
Exactly, yeah. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created such a person in that manner. Example, a person is created with white skin tone, a person is created with a black skin tone.
Yeah.
And everyone is beautiful in their own manner.
Yeah.
So this is there. So, and what is important here, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not the appearance.
It's the piety.
It's the piety.
Piety and taqwa. And yeah, thank you, brother. That was
all the
time we have for today's episode. Thank you, dear listeners. Teach your children piety. Because piety is something that's going to count, not the physical appearance. Because rosy lips, rosy cheeks, they're going to fade away one day because they are all time's fool. Thank you for listening. Until another episode, take good care of yourself. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
From Sana'a. Hello and welcome to your window into the latest that is unfolding in Sana'a, Yemen. I am your host, Yusuf Mari, and in this program, we bring to you all of the latest stories from the U.S. airstrikes that have attacked Yemen across the board and into the retaliatory attacks from Yemen's armed forces and Yemen's naval forces that are attacking not only Israel, but also the USS Harry Truman aircraft carrier that is currently patrolling in the Red Sea. Joining me today is Nuda Al-Gadasi. She is a political activist, a mother, and somebody who has firsthand experienced the latest wave of the U.S. airstrikes. Nuda, thank you for joining us today.
You are welcome.
My first question to you is, as a mother and as an activist, how has it been experiencing these U.S. airstrikes, particularly with civilians, including women and children? You know, can you tell us, what type of psychological trauma are you and perhaps people that you know, children, experiencing in the midst of this U.S. aerial bombardment?
Okay, at first, women and children in Yemen are experiencing psychological trauma, especially children, because they are the main factors, the main victims in this long-term war. 80% of children are suffering from mental, physiological disorders, stress, anxiety, and depression. And also according to this statistics as according to local parties and organizations.
Mm-hmm.
These children suffers from stress, and they not lose just the beloved ones, their families or such like that, but they are suffering also from the destruction scenes and the strike scenes and the violent scenes and physiological situation that that threaten their physiological stability
mm-hmm.
for the future. And on the other hand, there is a new escalation of displacement wave,
mm-hmm.
internal displacement wave.
Mm-hmm.
There is a statistic reported that 5.1 million displaced people
mm-hmm.
will be at the end of this year due to the war. According to Danish Refugee Council, Yemen ranks the fifth in the displacement, internal displacements.
Mm-hmm.
In the scale of internal displacements,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And these children have, or women's the women's also have no chance maybe to return to their homes,
mm-hmm.
And in their tents, in the displacements camps, they couldn't have any basic services.
Mm-hmm.
They suffer from lack of health and education,
mm-hmm.
and other things, a lot of impacts due to the war. And me, about myself, last week I were to I go to shopping with
mm-hmm.
I went to shopping with my son.
Mm-hmm.
When one of the American aggression strikes hit the leadership in Tahrir Square, I was shocked, and exactly I hugged my son and fear. And I saw how many of women and children in the markets and in the in shopping market running and screaming,
mm-hmm.
and their children crying. These all impacts are threatens the stability of physiological of children.
You know, it's you know, when people are watching what's happening in Yemen, they see the airstrikes. You know, they don't really experience it. I spoke with Jackson Hinkle,
mm-hmm.
the American anti-imperial activist who was he visited Yemen, and he got a chance. You know, he lives in the U.S. He got a chance to experience these U.S. air raids, and he could not believe it. You know, we talk about people seeing what's happening in Yemen, and you know, they're used to seeing it on movies in Hollywood, on Netflix, but it's definitely something else. For those who experienced the aerial bombardment, who experienced the airstrikes, the weapons of mass destruction only yards away from where you are living. And of course, these U.S. air raids have targeted mostly civilian neighborhoods. So with that, I want to ask you, what do you think the main objective of the U.S. is with these airstrikes? They have their declared, you know, they're claiming that their attacks is to safeguard maritime traffic in Bab al-Mandab, that there's this imminent threat that the world faces from Yemen, and that Yemen is stopping the shipment in the Red Sea. This is what the U.S. and the Trump administration is declaring. However, I want to ask you, what do you think their real objective is in this military operations in Yemen?
Washington promotes its operations as war on maritime threats. But in fact, their goal is to break the blockade that imposed by Ansar Allah on the on the ships of Israeli occupation entity, who go and has a link with the Palestinian war, and their interest also for their interest to protect the Israeli interests, and these strikes will not change the military equation. Because U.S. are facing military and strategic crisis with dealing with this matter, and they didn't achieve any goals of their declared, as they said. And certainly, the declared goals of America is contradict with the reality of doing. They are hitting civilians, building and civilian objects, hitting civilian and children, and making fear for children's. And they are lying on their announced goals. The basic goals of their war is to protect the Israeli interests and to cause we are prevent them from continuing their war on Gaza. As the revolution leader says, may Allah protect him, that we will stop our operations against them in the Red Sea and other operations if they lift the blockade on Gaza Strip and enter the Ides to them. And our threat is not for other countries. Our threat is for the Israeli ships that go to Israel and go to the Israeli army to hit and continue their war on Gaza.
You know, there's a lot of U.S. Commentators, U.S. Influencers, including a very famous one, Candace Owens. She's been very, you know, she's condemned the Trump administration. She's condemning the U.S. government because she's, and you know, this is a big influencer. She's causing a lot of instability in U.S. media. And she's saying that basically the government, the U.S. government is being blackmailed by Israel, that Israel is forcing U.S. politicians to act on U.S.'s on Israel's interest, and that they are being forced to do so through blackmail, meaning that, you know, if the U.S. politicians don't take the political stance that Israel wants the U.S. to take, then, you know, they extort them, they blackmail them, they threaten them, they threaten their lives. And this has caused sort of this, you know, a lot of discussion in U.S. politics. Do you think that Americans, the ordinary American, is starting to wake up to the reality of their government, you know, being a proxy entity for Israel? Because in Yemen, I think the general sentiment is that the U.S. is enacting on behalf of Israeli interests. But now the Americans, the ordinary Americans, are starting to see this, and they're starting to condemn their own government because they feel that their government has been hijacked by the international Israeli lobby.
American civilian, ordinary civilians, they were, they didn't know about Yemen before and what is happening here. And now they are seeing from other channels and social sites that what is happening in Yemen is crime, and their state is violating our state sovereignty in Yemen. They start to wake up and make marches to support Gaza Strip and to saying that stop your crimes in other countries such Yemen and Palestine. And they made demonstrations. And also in the same side, American state unveil their ugly face in front of their people. They start to prevent them from solidarity, to give solidarity with the Palestinian people. So the Trump administration start to prevent any marches or anyone who want to support Gaza Strip or to defend on the humanity. He started to take them in prison.
You know, Trump, when he was running for president, he said that he will end the wars in the Middle East. As soon as he came to power, he did the total opposite. He ignited wars in the Middle East. Again, you know, why do you think these U.S. politicians, what they say before they reach power, for example, Trump, you know, it seems like when they, you know, when they reach the White House, when they become president, they get a script and they do the total opposite of what they promised to do. Do you think that you know, is it possible that he's being blackmailed? Is he being threatened? Is, you know, why is he being forced, or why is President Trump doing what the American people simply are opposed of?
Because they have special interests, and of course they blackmail them and threatens them. They cannot do anything without Israeli orders. Mm-hmm. Israel is the one who control America and control its policies. They have bilateral interests with them. So he cannot do what his people called for. He will, of course, do what the Zionist entity saying.
It's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, in the Middle East and third world countries,
and they have special goals in the Middle East. They have wealth resources.
Right.
In Arab countries, we have a lot of wealth resources, oil and other things of resources. Mm-hmm. They want this. They want to control us.
Exactly. And that's exactly, precisely the case with some countries like Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and other countries across the Middle East. We're used to seeing them, you know, being allies or being in the pockets or being extension proxy states of the U.S. and perhaps even of Israel. But, you know, the world is just not used to seeing a superpower such as the United States become also a proxy state for Israel, for the illegal state of Israel. So it's just very interesting. Now, my third question I want to ask you is, you know, in the midst of this U.S. aerial campaign, most of what they have targeted is Yemen's public installations and key economic infrastructure, such as, you know, power transmission towers, government facilities, government buildings, roads. As you mentioned, you experienced firsthand their attack on a public road near a market here in the capital, Sana'a. But they're also targeting stone cutting yards. They're targeting steel factories. They're targeting the port of Hodeidah. Why are they targeting Yemen's economy? We've seen Saudi Arabia do this in the 2015-2021, which led to a humanitarian catastrophe. And now we're seeing the U.S., you know, Yemen is slowly but surely coming out of the humanitarian catastrophe that they were forced into. But now we see the U.S. attacking these vital lifelines of Yemen's economy. Why are they doing so?
Because if we have a strong economy, we will fight them. We will fight Israel entity. And we will be a strong power in the world, a main power in the world. So they didn't want to see any country stronger than them. Mm-hmm. Because they wanted to control us. They wanted to take our wealth. Mm-hmm. They wanted to make us a fragile country without any economy and obey them. You know, so they distract us. And before the aggression, the Saudi Emirati aggression, was not Saudi Emirati aggression. The real aggression was American aggression on us and Israeli aggression. They fight us, and they are just proxy. They want to take our resources and control us. So the rebuild and even all that, the rebuild will take and double. The rebuild of our country will take long term and long time to rebuild again our economy. And our economy is fragile because of the war, 10 years of war on our country. And our state wants to be at the level of good basic economy. But we didn't have this because of this long war on us. And
why are they targeting the economy? What does the their declared goals were to safeguard, you know, according to them, to safeguard international shipping route, Bab al-Mandab and the Red Sea. What is attacking power transmissions, steel factories have anything to do with making, you know, with securing, according to them, securing their international shipping lane in Bab al-Mandab?
We have a strategic position in the world. We have Bab al-Mandab Strait and other strategic important sites that we can prevent them to do their plans in Gaza Strip, because we prevented them from entering entering weapons to Gaza Strip. So we control Bab al-Mandab. We can control Bab al-Mandab, and they want. And they wanted to enter the weapons and other things to Gaza Strip and help Israel. And we prevented them. So the main reason for their hitting the economy of our country is to prevent us from developing our capability of military capability that will prevent them to triumph over us. And we defeat them. And even we have a lot of crisis in economic and our economy is fragile, but we are stand strong and we rebuild and we enter every week a new weapon. Mm-hmm. As the Sayyid said, we will face the escalation with escalation, and we have, as he said in last speech, we have new unveiling new weapons that will enter the confrontation and will surprise them.
What do you think, when you mentioned that we've seen the military capabilities of Yemen's armed forces advance from, you know, just simply having just AK, rifles when the movement, the Ansar Allah movement first started, and to now having the hypersonic missiles, which are able to reach occupied Palestine from Yemen upon launching in less than 11 minutes.
Yesterday, I think we hit Truman for three times during 24 hours.
Right.
And we have ability to take the confrontations long time as we can.
How do you respond to the international silence or complicity with what's happening in Yemen in the face of these U.S. airstrikes? And what role do you think global civil society should be playing in what is happening in Yemen, the U.S. airstrikes? What role do you think they should be playing?
Our response is the same as the revolution leader says at his last speech, when he pointed his finger to the UN and the U.S., that they have the main role in all these crimes and in supporting Israel and in committing brutal crimes in Yemen and in Gaza. And the international silence is one of the factors that made American and Israeli aggression dare to target the oppressed people in the world. So even the situation, if America find anyone who condemned, just only condemned by saying their crimes, they prevented them to condemn the crimes of America and Israel in Gaza or in Yemen or in other world oppressed world. So we called the civil society of international society to do their duty, as at least to not dehumanize yourself. If your religion and your law and prevents you from saying or condemning these crimes, do not dehumanize these crimes. Yeah. And of course, at least condemn and what is happening in Palestine.
You know, it seems that the tone that they've adopted, even when they're trying to take a anti-war stance, it still seems that they're parroting the same narrative, right? That is always a lame and weak justification some way, somehow, that justifies the U.S. airstrikes. There's still this narrative in the media that the U.S. is launching these operations because Yemen is attacking all shipment that goes through the Red Sea, which is simply not the case. And, we constantly repeat this and try to reconquer the true narrative, which is that these attacks or these, it's a naval blockade, actually. In actuality, as of right now, the armed forces, Yemen's armed forces, they haven't launched an attack against an Israeli-linked ship, mainly because they haven't tried to cross the Red Sea or Bab el-Mandab unnoticed like they used to 6 months ago and 5 months ago, where then they faced attacks from the naval forces. But why do you think the U.S. is hell and Israel, why are they so hell-bent on trying to establish this dominant narrative that Yemen is attacking the entire world and not just Israel?
They want to believe them that we are hitting all ships to make them ally with them, to support them, to make other countries be with them and allying with them and supporting them with weapons and fighting beside of them, Yemen. And all of countries know that, the world countries know that, and that Yemen and armed forces of Yemeni armed forces do not hurt any Shab of other countries, just the Israeli ones and the American ones that passed the lines of Bab al-Mandab and will go to Gaza to head them and strike them. And our armed forces issued a lot of statements saying always that we are not a threat to any ships other than the Israeli entity ships.
Right, and again, these ships, Israel's economy, 60% of Israel's economy is made up of trade to East Asia, which goes through Bab al-Mandab and through the Red Sea. So not having access to East Asia is basically preventing Israel from access to 60% of its economy. Make no mistake about it, this naval blockade by Yemen is having a great impact, mainly on Israel's economy. Israel needs its economy to sustain its genocide that it's committing in Palestine. All these points you have articulated very well. I want to ask you, though, where do you think this war is heading towards? Because we know that, as you mentioned, the Sayyid, he stated in his speech that Yemen will meet escalations with escalations. What does that mean? Because we've already seen the hypersonic missiles target Israeli sites, Israeli military sites. We've seen
reach Yavan, Ben Gurion airport,
which forced it to close for temporarily. But it's the airlines are not very comfortable. Commercial airlines they're just not very comfortable of flying to Ben Gurion airport in Tel Aviv in Yaffa. The escalations of military activities, of military attacks from Yemen. If now the limit is the hypersonic missiles and Yemen is threatening to escalate, where do you see this military escalations reach? What new heights can the world expect going forward if tensions continue to rise and if Yemen decides to step up its military operations?
I think we will reach to highest level in confronting Israeli entity. Maybe we will enter Gaza Strip. We will go there and fight them, facing them face to face.
With the logistics of it, facing Israel, because protests take to the streets every Friday. Millions of people take to the streets every Friday, saying that they would want nothing more than Saudi Arabia and Jordan to open their borders, so that Yemen can march into occupied Palestine and liberate the land of Al-Aqsa. Even the leader of Ansarullah, Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi, he challenged Saudi Arabia, to call Yemen on its bluff and go ahead and open the borders and see if Yemen means what it is saying. Obviously, they didn't open their borders. So how can there be a direct confrontation against the Israeli entity if countries like Saudi Arabia, Jordan are unwilling to open their border, and in some cases helping out and enabling the genocide and helping out Israel carry out its coordinated operations in Yemen with the U.S.?
We have new weapons. We are developing our military capabilities every day, and we could reach any area, and we could surprise the enemy entity. And we could change the equation as the U.S. Leadership, central leadership, military leadership says, and Israeli media reports saying, and they are they are far from us. They know that we have new abilities to go there and to fight them with the new weapons. And all experts of the world saying that Yemen is the graveyard of invaders. They are strong along the history, and they can and could do anything if they have a real cause. And we have real cause. We have central cause is the Palestinian cause. And all people of Yemen can go and fight with every ability that they can gain. So we could help our armed forces in military industrial and we can fight them. Also, we will know, we will see in the next weeks and in the coming weeks, we will witness new weapons enter the confrontation with them, and we will surprise them. The days will prove that.
As a Yemeni woman, what is your message to the world, and especially to other women with resistance, justice, and solidarity in times like this, in times where genocide is being perpetrated against the Palestinian people, and in times of U.S. airstrikes and perhaps even Israeli airstrikes on the horizon, as Netanyahu has threatened also to take military actions against Yemen, since Yemen continues to attack occupied Palestine. What is your message?
My message is for the free people of the world, and especially women, to condemn at least the crimes in Gaza Strip and in Yemen, and whose grievances became clear and became a beacon for the issues of all vulnerable and oppressed people in the world, in the earth. At least come in a position condemning these crimes, and the voice has a strong impact on the Israeli entity. And give your humanity, and even there is Israeli and American pan. These days, Trump issued a decision to ban any demonstrations or any voice, to silence any voice condemning the Israeli entity crimes. The last of which was the Palestinian student who is in trial now, and Trump wants to expel him from United States because he shout and say and cry over the crimes of U.S. and Israeli entity on Gaza Strip, and they wanted to expel him. So your voice has an impact on this war, as the martyr leader Sayyid Hussein Badruddin al-Houthi, may Allah mercy on him, says in his first speech addressing Yemenis, said that your voice has an impact. Scream and you will find someone who will scream with you, and the cry and the scream and your voice has impact on them.
Definitely, Yemen has certainly proven to be a symbol of resistance, not just by a public mobilization, also by military mobilization. A lot of people are calling Yemen, Yemenis, the heroes of today's time for their stance with Palestine.
We fight them by all available means.
Exactly, and I think that's something that's somewhat sort of as an inspirational role to not just Muslims, not just Arabs, but also the international community, people all across the world. But I want to thank you for joining us today. That is all the time that we have for today. Thank you for joining us in this program of In Your Window into Yemen. Please stay informed and also stay safe.
Interested to know about history, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune in to IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz. a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a very significant question. And that question is related to the time we are currently in. As you know, we have finished the month of Ramadan. And for some of you, today is the day of Eid. For a lot of you, it was yesterday, the day of Eid al-Fitr, which is a day of celebration. As you know, the word Eid comes from the word Oud, which means to return, which implies we are returning to Allah. We've made a return to Allah. We've came back to Him by fasting and worshiping in the month of Ramadan. But like everything, sometimes certain things apparently are a certain way, but in reality, their truth and their reality is something far different. The same thing goes for the Eid festival, right? It has a certain superficial appearance, and it also has a truth and a reality. So the question we want to pose today is this: what exactly is the true Eid, or what is the reality of Eid, this holiday? In order to answer this question, we can look at the hadith which have been narrated from our infallibles regarding this topic. By way of example, in one beautiful hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam has been reported as having said, he said this regarding one of the Eids: verily, it is only a festival for he whose fast Allah has accepted and whose prayers He has acknowledged. لِمَنْ قَبِلَ اللَّهُ صِيَامَهُ وَشَكَرَ قِيَامَهُ. And every day in which we do not disobey Allah. So the superficial, the Eid, you know, the event of Eid which comes after Ramadan, it's only truly Eid and a festival for the person whose acts of worship in the month of Ramadan have been accepted. Now, keeping this criterion in mind, the Imam, he generalizes this and says that every day in which we you know, are good servants of Allah and obey Him and listen to Him, we can consider those as festivals, and we should be happy on those days. The Imam said, "And every day in which we do not disobey Allah is a day of celebration." So a lot of the friends of God, a lot of the awliya of God, you know, at the end of the day, after they would examine the deeds they committed that day, and they would see that in that day they didn't disobey Allah, they were good servants of Allah, they would, you know, be happy, and you know, they would thank God for it, and they would, you know, celebrate that, you know, because of that. So this is something which has been here narrated in this hadith. In another beautiful hadith, a person named Suwaid ibn Ghafla, he says, "I went to visit him," meaning Imam Ali, "on one of the festivals, and he had a small table in front of him on which was wheat, a bread, and a plate of khatifa and milbana." Well, these are some foods. "So I asked him, 'O Commander of the Faithful, it is a day of celebration, and you are eating khatifa?' To which he replied, 'It is only a day of celebration for whoever has been forgiven.'" Right? So, the significance and the truth of the Eid lies in us being forgiven by God Almighty. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the truth of Eid in the light of the hadith of the infallibles. Alayhim wassalam. Until next time, wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
the limelight.
In Gaza, the struggle for food is about more than satiating hunger. It is a battle for human dignity. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "The Zionist regime has tightened its chokehold on Gaza's crossings, preventing the entry of commercial goods and humanitarian aid. The renewed attacks, which have killed hundreds of people over the past week, signal a resumption of the war in which starvation was used as a deadly weapon. Not that the war ever really ended, the struggle to fill their bellies is one that families are still up against, with no reprieve during Ramadan, during which the fasts are traditionally broken by communal meals. Finding new ways to prepare familiar dishes with extremely limited ingredients is one means by which people are resisting. They improvise one recipes by using canned instead of fresh meats or onion and garlic powder when the vegetables, basic ingredients in cuisine, are nowhere to be found. With sugar expensive and scarce, people turn to honey or date molasses received by some families in aid packages to create dishes that satisfy their bodies and ease their psychological pain." Fish has been extremely difficult to obtain because of the siege on Gaza's coastal waters that is enforced by lethal fire by the Zionist regime navy. Food in Gaza is not merely sustenance, it is a symbol of steadfastness. The kitchen is not just a place for cooking, it is an open arena to protest the harshness imposed by the Zionist regime's genocide and severe restrictions which remain ongoing. One of the greatest challenges faced by Palestinians living in Gaza is the exorbitant cost of basic items. Cooking oil has become a luxury good, with families sometimes going months without being able to purchase any. A liter can cost $30 or more, depending on the status of Gaza's crossings and the prices demanded by exploitative traders, forcing people to use it sparingly. When Ramadan began earlier this month, which was soon followed by the Zionist regime's total closure of the crossings, the price of cooking oil spiked once again, and fresh foods such as chicken and meat became prohibitively expensive or unavailable once more. This phase of a struggle has been the harshest, with shortages of essentials and prices still sky high. No reconstruction, and the only option to get anywhere is on foot. And now, the Zionist regime collapsed the January ceasefire, which didn't last for a full 2 months. There is little relief to be found in Gaza, where there is little to be found of much of anything. Meat and chicken currently unavailable, families are resorting to some of the approximities of familiar dishes that have characterized cuisine during the war. One of these dishes involves chicken or beef mortadella, a processed food product more readily available than fresh meat, to prepare alternative recipes mimicking roasted chicken. Known as fake chicken, the dish is prepared by slicing the mortadella into long, thin pieces. The strips are seasoned with chicken or shawarma, spice blends, salt and black pepper. After that, they coat it with breadcrumbs and deep fry in oil. The technique is similar to how chicken breasts were commonly prepared before the war. With the mortadella, the result is a dish resembling crispy chicken fingers. Bread, essential to every meal in cuisine, disappeared from plates at a certain point during the Zionist regime's war in Gaza. Early on, the Israeli regime bombed Gaza's bakeries and deprived them of electricity, fuel, and flour, a recipe for famine. During the period of no bread and no flour, families who were able to buy the scarce quantities of pasta available on the market grind the pasta and use the resulting pasta flour to bake bread. Under famine conditions, the quality of light but chewy pasta bread loaves, which was neither bad nor good in flavor, was irrelevant, given the lack of alternatives to alleviate their hunger. When some of the bakeries reopened around this time last year, bread became available in Gaza once again, but the bakeries were unable to meet the high demand. Some people were even crushed to death after being trampled in a crowd waiting for bread. While some families are able to buy bread, others make bread at home using flour and bake the loaves in a clay oven amid the lack of gas and electricity. The firewood used to bake in clay ovens, like everything else in Gaza, comes at a high price and is therefore difficult to obtain. Some families pay a fee to use communal clay ovens to bake their bread. People are making do with whatever available in the market. The shortage of meat and poultry in Gaza has led many families to seek alternatives to ensure diverse meals. Among their alternatives, Bulgur dried cracked wheat is an ideal choice. They prepare the chicken by soaking the bulgur in water until it becomes soft. Then they grind it, add spices and a little bit of breadcrumbs. After that, they mix everything together and shape it into long fingers. Then they dip it in flour and butter, followed by more breadcrumbs. Finally, they cook the fingers in a deep fryer, giving it the crunchy outer texture and soft inside that is reminiscent of fried chicken. Despite the harsh reality, people in Gaza insist that life must go on and that food must remain food, regardless of the circumstances.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance has criticized Denmark's treatment of Greenland and says Greenland should come under America's security umbrella. we take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story. US Vice President J.D. Vance told troops in Greenland that the United States has to gain control of the Arctic island to stop the threat of China and Russia, as he doubled down on criticizing Denmark, which he said has not done a good job in Greenland. Under increasingly strained relations between the White House, Greenland, and Denmark, the US Vice President said during a visit to Pituffik Space Base on Friday, 28th of March, he said, "Our message to Denmark is very simple. You have not done a good job by the people of Greenland. You have underinvested in the people of Greenland, and you have underinvested in the security architecture of this incredible, beautiful landmass." Speaking alongside U.S. troops, as well as Donald Trump's national security advisor, Mike Waltz, who's at the center of the Signal Message Group's security breach, Waltz's wife, Julia Nashewat, U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright, and the senator from Utah, Mike Lee, he said the Trump administration's argument was not with the people of Greenland, rather it was with the leadership in Denmark, which he accused of having underinvested in Greenland and its security. J.D. Vance added, "That simply must change. It is the policy of the United States that will change." Greenland, he said, would be better off coming under the United States' security umbrella than you would be under Denmark's security umbrella. Vance claimed the territory was not being kept safe by Denmark from a lot of very aggressive incursions from Russia, from China, and from other nations. Shortly after, he flew into the ice-locked U.S. military base in Pituffik in northwestern Greenland with his wife, Usha, and other senior U.S. officials on Friday. The vice president told U.S. troops he was really interested in Arctic security. He said, "As you all know, it is a big issue and it's only going to get bigger over the coming decades." In the White House, meanwhile, Donald Trump reiterated his previous claims that the U.S. needs Greenland for world peace. Trump said, "I think Greenland understands that the United States should own it." Speaking at a press conference on Friday, 28th of March, Donald Trump said, "And if Denmark and the European Union don't understand it, we have to explain it to them. We need Greenland, very importantly for international security. We have to have Greenland. There are," he claimed, "Chinese and Russian ships all over the place." Just hours before J.D. Vance's arrival in Newark, political leaders agreed to form a broad four-party coalition government in a show of national unity. In a rebuke to the Trump administration and its public campaign to gain control of Greenland, four of Greenland's five political parties signed the coalition agreement on Friday, 28th of March, which states on page one, "Greenland belongs to us." There has been a week of heightened tension amid already strained relations between the United States, Greenland, and Denmark as a result of Donald Trump's repeated threats to acquire Greenland. Writing on social media before his plane landed, J.D. Vance said, "We're on our way and looking forward to it." Greenland, a former Danish colony, is a semi-autonomous territory within the Kingdom of Denmark. Earlier in the week, the Danish Prime Minister, Mette Frederiksen, accused the United States of putting unacceptable pressure on Greenland and Denmark to give up the territory. Mette Frederiksen added, "It's pressure that we will resist." On Thursday, 22nd of March, Donald Trump renewed his vow to take control of the island. Trump said, "We need Greenland for national security and international security, so we'll go as far as we have to go. We need Greenland, and the world needs us to have..."